broadcasting live from the West End Waltham in Boston, Massachusetts, for Vistage Executive Summit 2015. It's CEO exclusive. Now, here's your host, Soyini Koch.
Welcome to the Vistage Executive Summit 2015, broadcasting from Boston. I am delighted to have with me in this segment Will Novy, who is a very eloquent speaker on culture and tribes, building tribes and businesses and using tribes to build your brand. So, Will, I would love it if you'd tell us a little bit about what you're going to talk about today with Vistage and how that can inform and help CEOs in the middle market build their businesses.
Sure. There's a more dangerous setup than being introduced as very eloquent. I can't think what it is, but I will.
Well, you're British, so you automatically sound eloquent.
I will
so
now
you just need to sound
abuse
British.
My 15 minutes of sounding British to try and sound eloquent. What am I going to talk to people today? I'm going to talk about, I think, the biggest issue they face, which is that if you look at what is happening in practically every market and due to social networks and the internet, what I think those are doing, we can make all sorts of predictions about what's the next Facebook or what is the next Twitter or whatever it might be. But I think the core takeaway of what's happening in terms of social media and the internet is that it's distilling excitement. Okay. That's what's happening in the world.
So when you say distilling, it's like separating non-excitement from true, genuine, hardcore, pure adrenaline excitement.
Yeah, you think about whatever you're excited about in your life, whatever we were just talking about CrossFit, right? Let's say you're into CrossFit now, but let's say you're into the idea of CrossFit, which is a fitness craze or whatever you want to call it, a fitness cult, we call it, a few years ago. You would have, talked to your friends about it, and then you might have got a book from the library, and then you'd have taken you 20 steps to connect with that excitement, right? What the internet and social media has done is it's one click to the most exciting version of whatever you're interested in. And what I think every business needs to realize is you are now competing to be that one click. And if I click on you and I get there and I don't have an incredibly powerful sense of this is it, this is where that excitement is, this is where I'm going to have that really strong connection to my tribe, I'm going to click somewhere else and I'm never coming back. You know, the painful truth is you're either going to be that click for your tribe or you're not. And so to look into the world as a business, as an organization, as a nonprofit, and say, who is my tribe? When they go and do that one click, are they coming to us? And when they do it, do they have this powerful, visceral reaction of, okay, I've arrived where I want it to be. Okay. And it might be a tribe that's latent, that's waiting to be identified, or it might be a tribe that's already out there. But unless you deliver on that as a brand, you're not going to succeed. So what I'm talking to people about today is, what is the journey from wherever you are now to being that one click where you're so strongly aligned with your tribe that they're going to have that powerful experience when they come to you? And I think that's true for huge brands, tiny brands, small church groups, doesn't matter who you are.
Tell me, though, I'm a dollars and cents girl, mm-hmm. right? So this is all very esoteric.
I love you people, you dollars and cents people. Are we going to talk spreadsheets on the radio? This is going to be agony.
Yeah, exactly. How does this impact the profit of a company? It sounds very esoteric, you know, tribe and yep. culture and following and excitement. And
yeah. Okay. Well, I'll answer it in a tangential way. When you think in terms of dollar and cents, the thing you're going to do is basically say, okay, we have consumers. We need to sell to consumers at a certain margin, right? You're going to start going down that road of breaking this into dollars and cents and things that go in the spreadsheet, ROI on thinking about brand. And it's always been, I think, the job of people who are interested in brand strategy to get folks over the hump of what is going to be my return in investing on brand or whatever that might be. And what I would say is just calling people consumers, just thinking in terms of how do I profit from my consumers, that initial orientation is going to put you in precisely the wrong place to build the kind of tribe I'm talking about, right? It's no longer really the case that you have consumers, staff, and leadership. It is who is the group of people that are going to get so excited about this brand that they're not going to worry. They become insensitive to cost, right? Going back to the CrossFit example. I'm an avid CrossFitter, right? I arrive here to speak today. And before I do that, I want to get my workout in and go to a CrossFit box.
Where do you live?
Portland, Oregon.
Okay, so you flew in.
So I fly in last night. I get up this morning, you know, I go online, I just type CrossFit into Google Maps, find the nearest good-looking CrossFit gym.
And you were jet-lagged, too.
I'm jet-lagged. I jump on Uber. I don't know how much it cost me to get there. I do know how much it cost me to get back. And I didn't care that it cost me $25 or whatever to do my workout. I'm price insensitive because I'm with my tribe in that place of excitement.
Did you get a good workout?
I'm sore as heck. Yeah, I got a great workout.
Let's back up to something that you mentioned. You said that companies that, you know, miss the mark on the one click, you know, don't get a second click. Where does this allow room for failure? Because I mean, certainly I feel like people in my business have clicked like 15 times and like finally
come to you.
They finally like found something that resonates. So, you know.
No, I can identify with that. I think getting at the question of failure, and I certainly think what we all have to understand is, okay, when I say you have to be that first click, you have to be that first click for your tribe. You don't necessarily have to be the number one brand in your sector. Because there are number two tribes too who are looking for the number two price point or whatever else it is. It's not that you're failing if you aren't the number one, but you have to understand your tribe's needs and those price point type issues. And then you have to really resonate with them. And if you're not resonating with them, you should know, you know, people ask me kind of like, how do I know when I've got to the tribe level? And I'm basically like, look, when you've reached that level, the stories you're going to hear from your so-called consumers and your staff are going to be so powerful that you're not going to have to ask me this question anymore, right? If you're asking the question, have I generated that kind of excitement? Do we have a tribe yet? Then you don't. You haven't got there yet. But the journey to get there is incremental, and every step you take in the right direction will get you to the right, you know, will help get you to the right place. So you just sit people down. You say, okay, do you understand who you are, what you do, and why it matters as a brand? Can you answer those questions? And I know within 2 minutes of asking that question, whether or not the CEO I'm talking to really understands, you know, who they are, what they do, and why it matters, and why I'm going to get excited about it. And if their answer sounds like a parroted version of their mission statement, that's where we're going to start, because we've got work to do, right? It shouldn't be a pitched answer. It shouldn't feel like a pitch.
Mm-hmm. Where do you start in this process? It sounds like you have a conversation with the CEO. You kind of diagnose they either are hot or they're not.
Yeah.
And then you go from there. So how does that look?
So I think of it in three major steps. And I think if you're doing this with a consulting group or doing it yourself at your organization, you can think of it in the same way. And the first is creating as much clarity as you can about the DNA of your brand or your organization and your aspirations as a brand. So who are we? You know, where do we come from? What is our history? What are all the things that have fed into our DNA? And then where do we want to go? And my experience is most people think they know the answer to those two questions, but really digging into that, all of a sudden, all these new things will come to the table about, you know, what our aspirations truly are and how our DNA, because your DNA is going to tell you exactly the kind of limits of where you can take that brand. And then your aspirations should start to tell you where you're going to go with it. So step one is create clarity about your DNA and aspirations. Step two is to create a vision and a voice for those aspirations. So where are we taking this brand? And then step three is to signal that to the world, right? Create powerful signals of that new aspiration, that new voice. And what you'll see, we call it ready, fire, aim, is that most people jump straight to the signals. They're like, look at my brand new website. You know, it's a scratch and sniff website with spinning dials and exploding PDF files or whatever. And they go straight to that, because that's the sexy stuff to spend your money on, without really understanding the DNA, their aspirations, and the journey they want to go on as a brand.
How does this differ for companies, service companies, where the personal brand of the leadership, or let's say the CEOs, because that's where we are today, is or is not distinct from the brand of the company? And how does the CEO think about that? Or do they need to think about their personal brand, mapping that onto the company and how it maps onto the company? Is it just a foregone conclusion that the personal brand of the CEO, that the company takes on the personal brand of the CEO? Could you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, actually, it's a really interesting question.
I try.
You're very eloquent in your questions. I think the job is often easier if you get the really close alignment. So go and look at the guy who's in charge of GoPro, whose name eludes me right now. But, you know, he's living their brand. He's a living embodiment of that brand. And so you have this kind of easy task of like, okay, I see GoPro, I see him, I see how this all fits together. And then you have companies where, you know, you might see or have an experience with the CEO and you're like, wow, there's really a difference between who that person is and how this brand shows up. So I think what is core is to understand that people will relate to brands in almost exactly the same way that they relate to other people. So a brand has a personality, and you have to be intentional about managing that personality. If your personality as a CEO is way off, you're going to have a really hard job, you know, making that happen in a really effective way. So the closer it is, the easier it is. But that is not to say that you couldn't have a CEO who doesn't have the personality of the brand. They must really understand that every single signal they send should reinforce the personality of that brand, right? Otherwise, if anyone detects at any, when it doesn't matter whether they're staff or consumers or whoever they might be, our antenna for inauthentic brands is so powerful. And there's nothing better on the internet than being able to say this brand has been inauthentic, right? It's the easiest sort of trolling, nasty story to tell about someone. So you cannot have any inauthentic signaling as a CEO. So I don't know if I'm answering the question really effectively, but it's easy if they're really closely aligned. I think it's harder if they're not, but that does not mean that can't be done. You must really understand that you are, as a CEO, personally responsible for the identity and the personality and the values of that brand, and you've got to manage for that, right? That has to come first. So if you're a brand that should be wearing jeans and you're wearing a three-piece suit as a CEO, you're already making your job harder.
And how does the brand building, if at all, differ for service companies versus product companies?
Yeah, I think it's minimally. And, you know, as you said, it's easy, really easy when you talk about brand to get really esoteric really quickly. There isn't a huge difference in my mind between selling a nonprofit, a foundation, a product, or a service. At the end of the day, I'm going to have a relationship with somebody and a relationship with that brand. And if I feel that that brand helps me make meaning in the world, tell a better story about who I am, enhance my brand by aligning with it, I'm going to do it. So the easiest version, the easiest sort of old story with that was the whole idea of, consulting firm?
McKinsey,
yeah. It's kind of the whole thing of like, well, you know, you can't go wrong if you go with McKinsey. Well, you know, maybe you can, maybe you can't. But the story I'm telling myself is that this brand answers that question, right? So basically people are going to align with brands that help them tell the right stories. And as we'll talk about today, the story they're really telling, everyone assumes that people use brands to tell stories to other people. They're really telling a story to yourself, right? So when your colleague and I start talking about CrossFit, what we're doing is I'm saying, hey, I was at CrossFit this morning. That's my story of who I am, right? And I'm enhancing my story to myself by sharing it with your colleague. So we don't want to admit this, but this is the truth of how and why we align with brands.
Yeah, and stories are a big theme of today.
Sure.
We had one of our earlier interviews with Pam Sherman, who's going to come on and talk about, you know, the fact that stories are innate in human, you know, human existence. We have to have stories.
Yeah, we can't exist without them.
We're wired for them. One thing that I'm very interested in is, you know, as you talk about brands and stories and tribe, you know, what are your favorite small business, mid-market CEO brands?
Mm-hmm.
Not the, you know, we know Apple and,
yeah,
you know, all those big, but something that's applicable to this market that you know.
Oh, sure. There are so many. And I will say I've been working with Vistage now. I think this is my third year of work. And so I meet them every single time I'm here, you know, and I'd love to be able to tell the stories of all of them. Some I get to work with more closely than others. I just work with a group who are a Sprague Pest Solutions group up in Tacoma, Washington.
Pest?
They do pest control.
Okay.
Pest management, you know, those kind of things. And if someone said to you, hey,
rats and roaches.
There you go. If someone said, that's what you think of when you talk about that brand, right? And if someone said to you, you're going to work with a pest control brand, I'd be like, wow, that's going to be a really sexy brand to work with. and then, of course, you dig into it, and it's this family company with an incredible history, amazing leadership, one of the favorite clients I've had in the last decade. And the story I want to tell is you just go to their – I went to their award ceremony, right? So this is giving out awards for rat and roach management, if you want to call it that way. And I will tell you, I was there with a creative team that we work with too. One of the most moving ceremonies I've been to in 5-10 years is an award ceremony for pest control people, because the culture of that organization is so strong, it's so powerful, it's so reinforced by the family that this is a moving event, you know? So the idea that, you know, big, sexy brands are the place to go, sure, I think there are big brands that do a really good job of managing themselves. But to me, it doesn't matter if you're big, small, does not matter what sector you're in. The only question is, are you going to take your tribe on a really exciting adventure? And then at that point, to me, I'm in, right? If you want to take your tribe on an exciting adventure, it's going to be an amazing job to work on. And I think where the biggest issue I'd say with small, medium-sized companies kind of in this is that they get inevitably tired and burnt out at a certain stage in their growth, and they forget the excitement of that adventure that they started on, right? And I just don't think you can afford to do that. You cannot lose sight of the excitement and the adventure that you need to take people on, because coming back to where I started, you have to have that now. That's what social media will destroy you if you're not on an exciting adventure.
That's the question that I wanted to maybe close with, is part of what I'm hearing is authenticity, mm-hmm, and discipline. But how do you manage to be authentic, disciplined, have brand integrity when you're dealing with humans, right? So you're dealing with humans, yeah, who don't always do the same thing. And, you know, they, sure, may say that they're honest and integrous, and then you find out that the CEO is sleeping with, you know, his secretary or whatever.
Right.
You know, like, how do
that's
you deal?
That's an exciting adventure, right?
Yeah,
now.
No, exactly. Yeah. Like, how do you deal with that? Or how do brands deal with that?
Yeah. Well, they deal with it authentically, just like any human being, right? So at the end of the day, the antenna for inauthentic is equally true whether you're doing bad things, doing good things, trying to cover stuff up. People will be very forgiving if they feel like you've been an authentic brand for a long time, and you're doing a good job of stepping up and coming forward, right? So it's going to be absolutely fascinating. I was just walking past the newspapers, you know, Volkswagen.
Volkswagen
with the next, you know, it's like, okay, are they going to manage that? It's going to be really interesting to see, because I think overall as a brand,
because now it's Audi and it's like, you know.
Hey, we drive a VW. I'm waiting to see. Before I thought we'd made it. Now I think we might be in the mix. It's going to be very, very interesting to track how they deal with that and how effective they deal with that. But the truth is, you know, if you look at the research on trust, this is a very disappointing discovery, that if you look at the research on trust, trust doesn't last. It's not a lasting quality. Trust is created day by day, whether you're in a marriage, whether you're in, you know, a relationship with a brand. And actually, so when you look at research on trust, people only trust people for sort of short amounts of time, and that has to keep being reinforced, right? Which shouldn't come as a huge surprise. But what that means is, whether you're in a relationship or whether you're a brand, you have to constantly be managing that trust between you and who you're with. So I think people are fallible. People understand that people are fallible, but they will not accept inauthenticity, and they will not accept complexity. That's the other thing people always get wrong with brands, is that sort of those are the two things that are going to push people away from that click. If you're too complex, if you don't tell a good story, if you don't have a good adventure to take us on, or you're inauthentic, then they're going to click away. They're on to the next one.
Great. Well, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day today.
My pleasure. I'll take. You can give us feedback on my eloquence later. Thank you.
This show is brought to you by Annona Enterprises, where strategy is your access to money and performance. Learn more at annonaenterprises.com.